And we're back.
And we're back.
Day two, Delta Fan Fest.
Interesting day one. And day two is starting to look really, really promising.
We did not get here late, despite any rumors you may hear of us rolling in at 2 o'clock.
Well, no, we're not late because, I mean, we really didn't have a certain time we had to be here.
I like the way you're thinking.
Technically.
I think there are more people here today than there were yesterday.
Well, there's a lot more cosplaying going on.
Oh, I walked by the housekeeping lady on my way out, and she smiled. And she said, "Hey, I hope y'all enjoyed your stay. Have a good afternoon." And I was like, "You ain't gonna smile like that when you see our room, honey." I started to leave like a $100 bill on the just laying there as like an apology. But then I realized I didn't have a $100 bill, and I don't even think I've ever seen one.
And yeah, it's,
or they have holograms in them now. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that room looked atrocious whenever we left. I don't think we leave that many beer cans in a man cave after a night like that.
Well, in our defense, all we had was like two little tiny garbage cans. So we threw stuff away until they were full. And then we just started leaving shit laying everywhere.
Batman in a trench coat. That's pretty cool.
Oh, check out the chick from Suicide Squad. The Enchantress. Yeah. Yeah, there's a Jared Leto Joker here. What was the girl's name when she's not the Enchantress?
June Moore.
And
Dr. June Moore.
She was dating this dude, right? And
Rick Flagg.
And I bet Rick Flagg was like, you know, when you turn into the crazy chick, it's like you're like really, really like psycho and stuff, but
he thinks it's better.
But like you're hotter. So could we just get the crazy chick back? Like,
but what if the crazy chick didn't like Rick Flagg? What if she liked somebody else? Now, I think that would pose a problem.
Well, you know. She's
what
like,
do you think about that, Jarm?
She's way hotter when she turns into the crazy chick. I don't think the Flash is wearing underwear.
He might be wearing a thong, just like the Black Panther was.
That's not creepy at all. That Mark would point that out. Hey, there's the Punisher.
Well, it's just like Mark noticing that Spider-Man yesterday worked out. He said, you know, I bet he does a lot of squats.
Yeah, Mark's got this little thing about noticing.
That's because of his glutes. Wait, that didn't sound any better.
Teen Titans are making their way back in. Well, three of the four. It's Animal. Beast Boy, that's it. Yeah, I was calling him Animal a while ago. Raven and Starfire. And they look really good.
Jon Snow actually has, like, the sword. What are they taking pictures of over there? The Stormtroopers?
I'd really like to get a closer look at the Enchantress as she'd come walking by. Her costume looks really good. Enchantress. And for those who don't know who we're talking about the witch on Suicide Squad.
She doesn't like to be referred to as a witch.
But that's how she was referred to.
But she doesn't like it.
Because she was 6,373 some odd years old.
She doesn't look a day over 5,900, I promise.
No, she doesn't.
Not from right here.
She holds her age really well.
Yeah. I like how, like, when you cosplay, you can be so ironic. Like, Jon Snow looks totally... He's got the fur cape. The cape with the fur around his shoulders and everything. He's got the sword. He's got the boots. I mean, the whole nine yards. And he's wearing a balloon animal hat. It's a balloon crown. Because he's the king of... he's the king of the north. I just don't remember him wearing a giant orange balloon crown in Game of Thrones.
I want that Kylo Ren mask over there on that table. I don't know if it's a mask or if it's just a statue kind of thing. Just a decorative.
I wonder who won the costume contest.
They ain't done it yet. It's at like 2:30 or something. Just later.
Well, just taking a quick glance around the room. I don't know. The post-apocalyptic Batman looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about a while ago. I really like his character. He's got a good...
That Joker really does look good.
He must work out. Why is the Joker taking a picture with Batman? That's just wrong on so many levels.
Because maybe in the multiverse, they're friends.
Stop it.
You know it's bad when Kill Pop Culture and Kill J like bleed into each other. And then we have a night like last night. Or this morning. Yeah.
Oh, I get it. I get it. Because he's storming. He's a cloud.
Yeah,
I get
I
it.
Now, I like not me being mean either. That's,
no, I think he's being ironic like I would be when I'm going to dress as the bat signal.
Jon Snow took off the crown.
I gotta say, I'm a little disappointed. I was starting, that really was starting to grow on me. Who's that orange girl? That girl is painted orange.
The one that's right, that's Starfire and Raven from Teen Titans.
I know I'm going to sound like cliche here, but, and it's not because she's not wearing a lot of clothes. It's literally because her costume is really spot on. But the Huntress, I think the Huntress is going to win.
The Huntress or the Enchantress?
The Enchantress, I'm sorry. The Enchantress, rather.
You know, it depends on how many categories they have, honestly.
You know what's weird? That guy that came yesterday wearing the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume, that was like the coolest costume ever.
He only had it on for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, he walked through one time and I haven't seen him since.
Maybe it's because he was trying to sell it.
I would buy it.
I probably would have too.
Okay, think about it. What's the problem with wearing like a full body costume? It's going to be hot, right? Well, his costume had a fan in it that kept it blown up and poofy, like the Marshmallow Man would be. And it also, it's going to keep you cool, man, because there's a fan in it. That's perfect. That's so me.
Yeah.
I want to be
the
ironic.
Fan on the
I
inside.
Want to be comfortable. I want to be naked inside of a Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man. I do not
costume.
Know what Stormtrooper is that. Because he doesn't look like a TIE Fighter.
That's the guy that blew up Alderaan.
Oh, they're really going like with all different varieties of stormtroopers.
Yeah, they're not just the cliche characters.
Yeah, I mean they've literally picked something out of every part of the stormtrooper job lineup, I guess you'd call it.
And the ones that fly on the speeders when they were on Endor.
Yeah. That's the ones with the funny looking mask right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're not very good nerds. We don't know the names of anything. And this is Star Wars we're talking about here.
Yeah, but you're a Star Wars geek.
We're
I'm
trying
not.
To provoke fact checkers. That's what we're doing.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah, that works.
It's a good way to cover up our ignorance.
We're not ignorant. We are just trying to... We're trying to elicit a response. Jerm, you're too close to the camera. You still got to get in it. Mark.
Damn it, where can I find a woman like that? Little cosplay with me. Come cosplay with me, baby.
I really think that Stormtrooper just shot me a dirty look. Because, I mean, he ain't going to hit me with anything else.
I mean, can you imagine how potentially chafing a Stormtrooper outfit could be? I mean, I imagine if one of the requirements of owning a Stormtrooper outfit would be baby powder.
I'm pretty sure. Or cornstarch. You can use cornstarch instead of baby powder for chafing.
It's not that I don't believe you. It's just
the fact that I know that.
It's just a fact.
And this show is not about facts, folks.
This show is not about facts.
It got really quiet in here all of a sudden.
I guess the costume contest is in another room because everybody just left. Hey, Barry, how was that hot dog? Give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a thumbs, like, kind of sideways. You just kind of shook your thumb back and forth. Were you afraid somebody would try to pick you up? I almost ran over this guy when I was leaving Walmart the other day, and he flipped me off. I said, hey, buddy, if you're trying to hitchhike, you're using the wrong finger. Nobody's going to pick you up like that.
I think what they're doing right now is just registering people for the costume contest. Yeah. It's raining outside, too, by the way. I very well may have to get up and walk around for a few minutes.
I want to go out there and get some of those grab boxes before we leave, before they pack everything up.
Yeah, it's kind of tempting, but I did see a guy open one right here by the door yesterday.
Well, yeah, the one I seen her open wasn't that good, but the one I seen somebody else open was really good.
Well, one of the boxes is supposed to have a puppy in it.
It could have a puppy, and I don't want that box, so I'm going to shake it first.
Well, that box that had the puppy in it, I got some bad news for you.
Is it Schrodinger's puppy?
That puppy's not alive anymore.
It could be. It could not be.
Well, I didn't see him open any box and put any food in there.
Well, it doesn't matter. You don't know what it is until you open it. Schrodinger, man. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Schrodinger's cat, and I'm sure he had a puppy too.
We're not as approachable as we should be.
But why would they approach us?
Why would they or why wouldn't they? Because the why wouldn't they list is a lot longer.
Okay, just go with the short list.
I mean, look at us. Do we look approachable?
Hang on, is this why they should or why they shouldn't? I'm confused. I mean, yeah, look at us.
We're
that's awesome. Why we're,
but they have to get to know us to find that out.
Oh yeah, that's true. They do have to get to know us first.
Germ just said we should get up and go mingle, and I was like, you lost me at get up. Yeah, as he was sitting down, he said we should get up
and go mingle.
Are you looking to reach a wider audience? Are you looking to get your name out there? Are you looking to go to the next level with advertisement? Well, think no more. Advertise with us at Kill Punk
Culture. Just tell us a little bit about your business and leave the rest to us. We'll build you a state-of-the-art commercial to be played every episode.
We're only going to take on about one or two more sponsors, so be sure to grab these slots up before they're gone.
We have plans to fit any budget, and we can build a commercial for any type of business.
Email killpopculture69@gmail.com today.
All right, I'm here with Mr. Jeremy Clark.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, man. How you been?
Oh, you know, it's just another day in paradise, right? As a bald German man once said.
Yeah, like I saw that, you know, it's like 3:15 now, and the con's over at like 5 or 6. And everybody started packing up, and they had like, hey, we got to get out of here. And then they saw it was raining, and they're like, oh, we can wait.
Yeah, you know, I hope a few people stick around and come say hi. You know, that's why we're here, is to meet and greet and, you know, do what we can to hopefully accommodate everybody that shows up.
Yep. Tell us a little bit about your various projects you got going on.
Sure. I've been doing a lot of cover work lately. I just wrapped up inking the Flash variant cosplay cover for Zenoscope, which is going to be the New York Comic Con exclusive that debuts here in a couple weeks. And another series that I'm on called Transgenesis that I'm doing both the interiors as well as some of the cover work on. That got went live earlier today. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's live as of this weekend, and hopefully some of you guys who are into the whole monster Stranger Things kind of look, that's what the book's got going on for it. So it's a lot of cool texture effects and dynamic shots that I don't think it's featured in as many comic books as it did back in the 90s, where it was all flash and awe.
Right. What's your go-to medium, I guess you'd call it? Like, what do you like to draw with? Like, what you like, penciling or paint or like?
Well, I have published credits as both a penciler and an inker, but my primary role in the industry is that of an inker, and I get to work on a lot of different creative art teams, whether it be on interior, sequential pages, or cover work. And currently, I've been working with cover artist Mike DeBalfo on all these variants that are being released through Zenoscope, and he's a good friend of mine from out in Phoenix, and you know, I like to think of us as a great team because our styles gel well together. You know, I hope that I enhance the foundation that's already there that he has provided me, and make it better in some ways for the people that get to see it later on.
Right on. Kind of walk me through the process of how inking works. Like, they give you a drawing. I mean, do you do any of it on computer? Is it all by hand or a little bit of both?
No, I'm a traditional artist through and through. The closest thing that I know how to do digitally is switch pencils to non-photo blue line.
And I can put filters on my Instagram posts.
That's about the extent to my knowledge when it comes to anything digital. There's something to be said about having a tangible, you know, piece of paper and being able to feel, you know, kind of what it is that you're working on, and that you're putting yourself not only into the work, but also being able to get your hands dirty and you know, create, which is what it's all about. It's all about ultimately creating a piece that somebody else might like and treasure for a long period of time. And so, the medium that I use, I'm an inker, so for me, I like to rock the P.H. Martin High Carb Black Star ink. And I utilize Winsor Series 7 brushes or the Hunt 102 Crow Quill. And sometimes you throw in a number of like little brush pens or things that you need just to get something done quickly. If I have a tight deadline, you know, sometimes, or if I'm at a show, for instance, and I have a deadline that has to be done here, I might not have my whole array of supplies that I would if I was back home,
right,
you know, working in the studio. And as a result, you know, you kind of have to work with what you have available to you. So while it's ideal to work with some of those things that I just mentioned, it's not always the case, depending on what the project is.
Right on. You have one particular piece that you, a lot of fans bring to you to get you to sign, like one that a reoccurring one that you see a lot that people want to get you to sign and stuff.
Well, you know, there's a series called Light Earth that I did a whole bunch of variant covers for, and they were kind of the pinup, very sexy female style characters, and that seems to be what a lot of folks gravitate towards, you know, something attractive, nice to look at. It's a cover, after all. That's what you guys are buying the comics primarily for, is what you see. You might not even have any idea of what's on the interior, but the cover attracted you, and that's why you go up to go look at
right.
it. So what a lot of people tend to bring me are some of those more pinup style covers. I did the San Diego Comic-Con exclusive variant for Zenoscope for Escape from Monster Island number 6. And it was a female Deadpool cosplay cover, which had a lot of, you know, the Deadpool movie, I guess, imagery associated with it. So
I was so surprised. I have yet to see maybe one or two Deadpools. I expected to see like 100.
Yeah, you know,
Deadpools
I think
cosplays.
I've seen more Harleys and Jokers, but that might just simply be because of that new movie that
right,
just released,
of course,
with Suicide Squad. So. Who knows? But
yeah, and every Harley I saw was the Suicide Squad version.
Yeah,
was
I mean,
one original.
I can promise you that by the second Deadpool movie, you'll get so tired of seeing Deadpool cosplays
right.
that you'll wish that it would have been like it was today, where you didn't see you know, 9 million of them.
Right. Do you say you had a panel earlier?
Yeah, I had to do a panel with Tom Nguyen. We did a art comic panel, and we just covered sort of you know, any questions that the audience had with regards to breaking into comics and, you know, what our particular job is. And in that role of comic book creation. So,
did you travel far to get here? You live in the area? Or?
Yeah, no. The show promoter, Alan, brought me in from Phoenix. And I must say, everybody's been really kind and generous around here. And hospitality has been great. So I've got no complaints, even though it was a little bit of a further travel distance than what I typically do for most of my shows. I haven't had any sort of things that would prevent me from coming back, which, you know, if they want me back, I'll be happy to do so.
There you go. You've done a lot of cons this year?
Yeah, I average 25 to 30 shows a year. I've already got 3 booked for next year with Emerald City Comic Con, Phoenix Comic Con, and Tampa Bay. So I book them well in advance. I try to get a nice solid con schedule so fans have as many capabilities as possible to interact and speak with me and maybe get some things signed.
Right on. Well, before you go, be sure to tell everybody about how they can find you online, all your social media, your websites and such.
Sure. With me, it's pretty simple. Everything's under my name plus the word art. So it's Jeremy Clark Art. That's my handle on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Pretty much everything you could possibly find me on is all Jeremy Clark Art.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes out. Have a safe trip back, and look forward to hearing from you again.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Those new band shirts look awesome. Where did you get those done?
At Anarchy Design.
They do screen printing now?
Oh, yeah. They do professional custom screen printing at a very competitive rate.
Well, where can I find them?
Look them up on Facebook, facebook.com/anarchydesign69, or email them at anarchydesign69@gmail.com. You can check out some of their work on their Facebook page. When you're ready to order, you can send them your idea, or they can design it for you. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com. It's a one-stop shop for all your screen printing needs. That's anarchydesign69@gmail.com.
I can't avoid being a little cliche here, but does busting make you feel good?
All over the place. yeah, it does.
Head to toe, man.
Oh, no. From one wall to the other.
I'm joined here with Tennessee Ghostbuster. What's your name?
Mike Mitchell.
Mike Mitchell.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the Tennessee Ghostbusters.
This group's been around for quite a while. We're stationed all over Tennessee. We have members in the Metro Nashville area. We have members in Jackson, Tennessee. Myself, I'm also in West Tennessee. And we have a bunch of members and a whole other chapter up in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Y'all's costumes are very, very detailed and accurate. And I've got a whole new appreciation for cosplay, especially after talking to these guys over here. They were talking about, like, some cosplayers have to freeze frame and count stitches. Like, how much attention to detail do y'all go into?
Well, that varies from group to group. We're not that picky. And, okay, let me explain that in a reference for everybody out there listening. I love the 501st guys, but between the 501st, which is Star Wars, and like the Ghostbusters fan community, you have people in the community that are that accurate, that want to be so accurate that it looked like it walked out of the movie prop, you know, right off the set.
Yeah.
And then you have people like me and some other people that we'll get to shoot as close as we can without breaking the bank.
Yeah.
Because in that, you know, it's always the question to ask anybody, how much are you willing to spend?
Yeah.
Because that's in any fandom, that's in any community. Because you could spend $3,000 and have a pack that looked like it walked off the movie set. Or you can spend what I did, and it looks close enough that you, a normal person walking around a con, wouldn't know.
Right. Obviously, I think everybody that's breathing is a huge fan of Ghostbusters, the first one. But there's a lot of people that are, you get different responses about Ghostbusters too. Even the people on the crew thought it was a disaster. I didn't really think it was that bad. What was your take on the sequel?
On the second one?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't want to do it. Well, not they, but Bill Murray.
Yeah, he
really
didn't want to do it. Yeah.
And the same thing about the new one, and the same thing about anything going forward. He just said, I didn't like the script, what they originally wrote versus what they did on set.
Right.
Because what Dan and Harold originally wrote was good, and that's why Murray was on.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they get onto the set and they say, well, we're taking this out, this out, this out, and Murray just got mad.
Yeah.
And didn't get what he was promised. That's what caused his whole Harold and Murray breakup, you want to call it that, the breakup of Harold and Murray. And
end of the bromance.
The big bromance. Well, if it wasn't for Harold Ramis, Bill Murray wouldn't have a career.
Yeah.
And that's just the truth. It was good. I mean, the second movie, they tried to... Okay, you can never get the magic you had from the first film. I don't care what movie you are to compare in the whole universe of movies we've seen. You can't get the magic the first Ghostbusters movie's created. I'm sorry. And when they rewrote the second movie, when they did the penning for it and then tried to do it, it's almost a complete recreation of the first movie, except for the business startup. Everything else is like, oh, we got a villain, we got save the chick, save the kid, same type of, you know, save New York, save the world.
Yeah.
It was the same setup. And that just really was boring to a lot of people. It was a good movie for what it was, but it never had the magic the first movie had.
I'm sure you've heard of the Ghostbusters Go to Hell idea.
That was the idea that Ramis came up with and Aykroyd. The reason that came about was because Murray was like, look, I don't want to do another movie. I'm done. I just don't want to have anything else to do with Ghostbusters. The sad part is Ghostbusters is one of the movies that launched his career.
Yeah.
That, Stripes, Groundhog Day. I mean, we can keep going. And if you have to notice, that all has to do with Harold Ramis. And it just never had the magic. And they just couldn't get a grasp of Murray. Murray was like, I don't want to do it. If you're going to do it, kill me off. Come, you know, make me a ghost or whatever. I don't want to have nothing. But they all came back together for the 2009 video game that was also penned by Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Which that essentially, to a Ghostbuster fan like me, was my third movie. I mean, in digital format.
And
but
what would a Bill Murray-less Ghostbusters movie, what would that even do? The diehard fans would still watch it because it's a Ghostbusters movie, but how would the public perceive a Bill Murray-less Ghostbusters movie?
Well, how would you perceive a Harold Ramis Ghostbusters movie? He's no longer with us, rest your soul, Mr.
Right.
Ramis. But I mean, it's just it. There again, it all lies in the magic.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to sound redundant and repetitive, but really, it took them four guys together to make that first film to really do it. But you could, I mean, it could be feasibly done. I mean, you could write out Murray's character completely. You know, just they're doing. He's a CEO of Ghostbusters Incorporated. He's running the company, so he's no longer to be seen. He's always in his office. I mean, there's so many ways you could write that.
Right.
Where's Egon? Oh, well, Egon's stuck in the lab. He's making new tech. He can't be found. I mean, there's so many different ideas you could bounce off of to where these guys are at, and that would easily just be, oh, well, you're just dismissing them because they're not in the movie. Well, yeah, but that's still a backstory.
Yeah.
I mean, what's happened now in Hollywood nowadays, and I think all of you can agree, is the writers have gotten lazy.
Yeah.
All of Hollywood has gotten lazy since the writer's strike, and we can't have a good, decent film come out because they don't want to write decent material. All the people that did write decent material aren't making the money they were anymore, so now they're like, oh, we don't want to write nothing, just let's reboot everything. Let's reboot every movie that came out in the 80s, the ones that even did really well, and the ones that didn't do well, and we'll see what works. And that's where I look at it now. That's what's
happening. They just throw it all against the wall. Let's see what sticks.
Let's throw this dart at the wall. Okay, what do we got on the wall today, boys? Let's see. We've got Terminator right there. Okay, we've got RoboCop. Oh, that'd do great. Let's see. Total Recall. Such a good movie. No. And they're just throwing darts at dartboards. That's all they're doing.
Well, I was really excited about the idea, and at one point I think this was the idea. Sort of like the way Star Wars did it recently. The old guys helped get the new guys over, and then the franchise continues because they planted that seed and nurtured
right.
it
well,
and sent them on.
We call that a passing of the torch.
Exactly.
You're handing the torch over to a new generation, to a new group of people. If they had took this new reboot they did, which was, it was a decent movie. Everybody out there, don't get mad. But it was a decent movie. I'm not going to say it was the best summer blockbuster in the world, because
right.
Lord knows it wasn't. It was just a good movie. It wasn't over the top. You know, it was toned down. It was, you know, we can't help bad marketing and bad publicity. That's just something that happens. I mean, it'll get better. I don't think they're going to do anything else Ghostbusters related to a film because they lost over $150 million on marketing.
Oh,
they made
wow.
their principal photography back at $146 million. They made that money, but they didn't make their marketing money back. And when you lose that marketing money, you're out. That's... You know,
right.
that's a big gamble. So if they do anything Ghostbusters, you might see a cartoon they were talking about. You know, you might see other things going on, but you probably won't see ever another Ghostbusters movie unless Dan actually forks out money out of his own pocket to make a movie.
Right. Let's talk about like some real life ghostbusting. Obviously, I'm wearing my Deep South Paranormal T-shirt.
Right.
He's a paranormal investigator. Do you dabble in that at all, or is you just stay on the fictional side of ghostbusting?
No, I have. I was actually a part of a paranormal team before, but it didn't really work out real well. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So I mean, it kind of dissolved. You know, I'm not really the skeptic. I actually believe there's something else out there that we just can't physically manifest and see. But there has to be something there. I mean, there isn't just death and then, hey, you're either going this place or this. No, there's something else in this world.
I call myself paranormal curious because I'm not going to say I don't believe it. I'm not going to say I do. I've never seen a ghost. I'm not even saying I want to see a ghost. I don't think I do. But it's definitely a curious topic. It's interesting to hear the stories. And
right.
I've been with him on investigations. And it's fun. I mean... Even if they're not ghosts out there, I mean, it's still fun. I mean, I think it's interesting.
So that you're paraskeptic,
yeah,
is what I call that. Not paracurious. You're paraskeptic.
A lot of times in the paranormal, I think sometimes the word skeptic is misused because I think everybody's skeptic to some level. What's your level of skepticism?
There's a degree of skepticism. Yeah, I'll give you that. There's many shades of gray there, and no, it's not 50. but no, yeah, see,
or is it?
Ding ding,
hey,
there you go. But no, it's just it just comes down to a fact of what you truly believe, and
right.
You know what you. I mean, there's reports people see ghosts. Actually, this one to go back to tie into Ghostbusters. The reason Dan Aykroyd came up with the idea of Ghostbusters was because his father, the paranormal experiences that he went through with his father, with the story. There is a book written that he wrote with his dad about all the paranormal experiences he had as a child and with his father that led him to writing Ghostbusters. So. Now, here's a question I have. If ghostbusting was a real job, would I do it? Oh, hell yeah, I'd do it. I'd do it in a heartbeat.
That does sound cool.
Yeah, I mean, come on. If it was a real gig, I mean, it'd be better than my 9-to-5.
Right. What's your take on, I don't know, the inside, like, the story behind the... Because for a while there, they had to start calling it the real Ghostbusters because there was another Ghostbusters that started operating as a cartoon.
Okay.
I was like, what was the deal? How did they get away with that?
All right. That
can I open up a restaurant called McDonald's and start selling burgers?
Right. Well, no, that's under parody law, but that's a different story. Like not Starbucks or not, you know, what was that they opened? I can't remember. They opened This Is Not Starbucks or something like that, and they opened it under parody law. No. What happened? Yeah, America McDowell's. There you go. What happened was in the, I'm going to say the late 50s, there was actually a live-action TV show called Ghostbusters. And it involved a monkey and two dudes with some equipment. And when they busted ghosts, or were busting ghosts, they didn't actually capture them. They exploded them. It's a weird concept.
I've never heard of that. Is it out there somewhere?
Yeah, it's on the internet. You can look it up. Just type in.
You just have an original 1950s.
I wouldn't even type original Ghostbusters
because
that's going to pop up the 84 Ghostbusters.
Right.
Just type in. Monkey with Ghostbusters. Ape with Ghostbusters. And what it'd do is, they Filmation actually did a animated version of it back in the like 80s and 90s.
Okay.
Or I'd say more the 90s. And what happened was, when the production company found out that there was another studio making a cartoon, and it was called Ghostbusters. Well, it came out at the same time. So in order to avoid confusion, they called the 84 Ghostbusters the real Ghostbusters, so that the kids would understand, oh, okay, these are the ones you saw on the movie. So these are the movie Ghostbusters you saw in cartoon form, so they're not confused with the other cartoon that came out at the same time. That's all that was. It's like, hey, Ape and two dudes, Ghostbusters. Four guys, Peter, Ray, Winston, and Egon, the real Ghostbusters, you know, with Slimer. Don't forget the one that came out, the other version of that, with Slimer. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They did. Yeah,
that's
they had
right.
one that was just, it actually would come up on the TV. It said, the real Ghostbusters with
I'd
Slimer.
I'd forgotten that. Yeah, you just refreshed my memory there, because I watched all the cartoon episodes.
That's
I thought
why
really
I'm the
good.
Ghostbusters fanatic. It's okay. It drives my wife nuts, but it's okay. She loves it, so that's why she's here with me.
Well, before you go, make sure you plug all your social media, your websites and stuff like that. Where can people find more about Tennessee Ghostbusters?
I like
your logo, by the way. It's the Ghostbuster logo with the state of Tennessee as the bar.
And the three stars of our state flag, which represents Middle, East, and West. The Facebook page is Tennessee Ghostbusters. Find us out. I don't know if we're running our website still. I believe we are. If we are, it's www.tn-gb.com. And I'm also have my own podcast and things on Facebook.
Right on.
That is
a little podcaster.
Yeah, I am going to plug that actually.
Go
plug
for
it hard.
Yeah.
Ding. Hey, shameless promotion.
Yeah, we call that
man.
Our shameless promotion, Bill, because we're actually in a band too.
Oh, and as well plug it. Go ahead, plug it while we're on this one.
I'm in a band called Killjay. Shameless.
There you go.
And I bought this bell out of sarcasm because I know everybody thought, like, oh, he's in a band. All he's going to do on his podcast is talk about his band. But technically, I've never played a song. I haven't. Rob did, the other guy that used to host with us. I've never played a Killjay song on the show.
Not,
so I don't overplug it, but sarcastically, I ring my shameless promotion bell when I do.
You got to do it. Well, anyways, my podcast is Fandoms Unbound. You can find us on Facebook at Fandoms Unbound. And we did have it on SoundHound for a while, so I mean, you can find it there. It's probably still somewhere floating in SoundCloud for a while. It's out there somewhere. But we usually post
I'll
videos.
Check that out. I'm not just a host of podcasts, but I've actually become a big fan of, and I like, you know, I like checking others out and stealing their ideas if they're good.
Well, yeah. Actually, on there, one of the main things we had is I have a video for YouTube that we recorded, and I'm actually doing a phone interview with Peter Mosen, the original Ghosthead, or that Dan Aykroyd came out on Leno. Was it Leno? No, it wasn't Leno. Who is that? When they all were on late night television, I'm
Coonan?
Drawing a blank. Huh?
Conan?
No, it wasn't Conan. It was, was it Letterman?
Before Arsenio Hall?
No, it wasn't Arsenio Hall. It wasn't Johnny Carson. Hey, here's Johnny. No, it wasn't him. Whoever, it was late night TV, and they all were on there, and they actually plugged, Dan Aykroyd came out and called Peter Mosen the king of the Ghostbuster fans. So yeah. I actually, before he got his title, which, I love you, if you're listening to this, Peter, I love you to death, he did a phone interview with me, and we're talking about his story about how he started doing promotions for the film before the film ever came out. He was the first fan to have a fan-built pack, fan-built flight suit, car. He had everything before the movie even rolled out in theaters.
Wow.
So that July, when the movie released, he was already there doing promotions for Columbia Pictures at the studio and, you know, all over.
That's cool. And, your other social media, like you said, you got a Facebook page, Twitter?
I don't have. The Tennessee Ghostbusters have Twitter, at Tennessee Ghostbusters, or TNGB. Actually, it's at TNGB. And that's pretty much all the social media I have. The rest of the group handles that. I'm just a pawn.
How many people are in your group?
Oh, God, it's over 20 deep.
Wow.
So, yeah, we have
a
lot of members.
I've seen a lot of different people come and go in today.
Right.
Were there any Ghostbusters here that weren't a part of your team?
Just a little kid that ran around. That was real cool.
Oh, okay.
Just the little kid that the parents made him his own flight suit.
Nice.
And trap and everything. I was like, wow, that's impressive. That really I always say, if I ever see a kid dressed as a Ghostbuster and the parents are there, I said, you raised them right.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like you raised that kid right because you showed them something from your childhood, and now they're you're passing it on. And that's all we can do, fellas. All we can do is pass on everything we learn and know in our own lives to our children and our grandchildren and everybody down the line, because if not, what are we going to live for?
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Well, thanks for coming by and talking to us for a few minutes.
Oh, man, it's good.
Definitely going to check out I'm going to check out your podcast and
go
to y'all's website and plug.
That's all we can do. The selfless shame promotion.
Yes, sir.
Ring that bell.
Thanks again. You have a good one.
Oh, man, you'll have a great day.
I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our good friends and sponsors of this show, Shadow Stalkers Paranormal from Amory, Mississippi.
This isn't your average paranormal thing.
Shadow Stalkers is a nonprofit group that hosts fundraisers for families in need, and they also host fundraisers for historical sites.
Their fundraisers and paranormal investigations are open to the public, and they encourage everyone not to just watch, but to join in.
Look them up on Facebook and feel free to shoot them a message if you have any questions.
They are here to assist you with any paranormal needs you may have.
That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out. That's Shadow Stalkers Paranormal. Go search for them on Facebook and check them out.
All right. Help me with my pronunciation of your last name. I have Tom
Nguyen, silent G.
Oh, okay. That's simpler than I thought.
There you go.
Have you been? How's the con
been
for you?
Oh, is this where we're starting now?
Yeah. We're always in the zone, man.
I'm doing well. Thank you. As of right now, just packing up and wrapping up the weekend here, Delta Fan Fest. So.
Yeah, it was funny. Around like 4-ish, people started tearing down, and then it started raining. They're like, we'll wait.
Now is it raining outside?
It was. It's cleared up now, and everybody's clearing out pretty quick.
That's usually the case. You know, if it's a slow Sunday, people start tearing around as early as two sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Depending on. You got a long trip?
Get back? I'll fly to Minneapolis tomorrow morning.
Okay. So Memphis Airport's not the worst in the world.
No, I actually quite like it. I'm going to be there a little earlier tomorrow just to make sure that I check in okay and check out the airport ports. One of my weird things is I like to go around airports around the country and just kind of walk around and check it out. And that's why I don't mind long layovers. I prefer them.
Wow.
As opposed to rushing and trying to catch the next
flight. That's true.
Too much stress.
Too stress.
I'd rather just kind of relax and check out the airport. So, yeah.
Have you heard about the conspiracy behind the Denver airport? We were talking about that yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a good conspiracy.
Underground bunker stuff.
And, yeah, the underground city.
Just crazy stuff. I'm hardcore into that. That stuff, the alien stuff, moon landing.
Aliens the one that built the pyramids?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, moon landing stuff, flat earth society. I wouldn't say I'm a flat earther, but... Yeah.
They've got some good points.
But I've watched some YouTube videos, and man, some of their arguments are actually really compelling.
And like, a lot of the people that argue that stuff are like physicists and scientists and airplane pilots that are flat earthers.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yeah, the routes really don't make sense.
Yeah, but it's weird. You know, like some of the stuff, like common sense stuff is, why can't you just hover a plane above and just let the Earth, if it spins as fast as the scientists say they do, well, why don't you just let the Earth rotate until you reach your destination
right.
and then drop? Or, you know, like there's never been a real NASA photo of the Earth.
Yeah, congratulations, you live on a painting.
Yeah, exactly. And then one guy said, well, you know, In all the years that they claim to have been in space, people are going to listen to it. They're going to like, I'm going to lose fans now.
No. They're going to think we're
people,
weirdos.
People have been in space. It's like, why can't you do something as simple in all these decades as an astronaut taking a video camera and just panning like 180 degrees around him?
Yeah, break
in orbit.
The fourth wall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But they don't do that. It's one of the simplest things you can do. And why not? I mean, I'd do it without even thinking about that.
Of
part,
course,
you know?
Yeah, that'd just be because, one of the first thing I'd do. But like, check it, I'm really in space.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, one thing I just heard yesterday that I was like, huh, is like all these engineers that build the railroads, they don't have to calculate on
the
tracks.
They don't compensate for the curve.
They have to compensate for the curve, and you would think they definitely would after.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's there.
Yeah, because there's a formula where for every certain amount of miles.
It's like 1 inch per mile squared or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. So then, like, there's video proof of these hyper like zoom cameras and telescopes that can see literally cities that are like 30 miles away or
that
so
you shouldn't be able
and
to
you
see.
Can see the like entire, you know, bottom of the structures of the buildings and everything too.
Yeah,
it's weird, you know. It's like I said, I'm not a flat earther, but man, their arguments are just compelling. You really can't argue against some of this
that's
stuff.
Kind of the way I am with almost every conspiracy. I find them so fascinating and entertaining that I almost don't care if they're not true.
Yeah, and in the end, you know, like, what I say is, even if it is a flat earth, who cares? I don't care. It's not going to affect my daily life.
It's not going to change
anything. I'm still going to, I'm still going to draw and go cruising for chicks when I can.
And right. And when you try to talk about the flat earth to some people that's never investigated it, they almost get mad at you. They're like, what? Are you serious? You really believe it? No, I'm not saying I believe it. I just think it's interesting.
It's like, well, I was the same way, but, you know, just going with an open mind. Just watch it. Just watch it as entertainment is what I say.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's true, though. People have been so indoctrinated with certain things. It's not just flat earth versus global earth. It's religion. You know, it's everything.
Yeah.
You know, everything.
Exactly.
That's what you grow up with.
The aliens that built the pyramids.
Yeah. No, I love the alien stuff, man. I'm actually going to go to Area 51. In a couple of weeks, and try to drive up to the fence.
That'd be nice.
Try to see if I can see anything in the sky.
So this could.
No, I'm not gonna cross the fence. I will get as close as I can. But
so what was the name of that podcast where he did his last interview? Was it Kill Pop Culture?
yeah.
Before he disappeared mysteriously.
Yeah. No, I get into that shit. That's awesome though.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit about. I guess we need to talk about comic books.
Oh yeah.
I thought
I was on a paranormal podcast here.
Hey, we do that too. You know, so I got my paranormal deep south paranormal shirt on. Yeah,
shit. That's awesome.
He's actually a ghost hunter. I'm paranormal curious, I hang out too.
I was supposed to do a show here in October in Del Rio, Texas, and the guy who runs that show, he's also a ghost hunter, and he was supposed to take me on my first ghost hunting trip. That's what I always wanted to do.
It's fun.
Never alone, but, you know, when you get with people who know what they're doing, I think that'd be kind of fun.
So. It is fun, except for the last one where we got lost. That wasn't fun. It's a long story.
Oh, no.
We got lost on a horse trail on the Natchez Trace.
in the dark, right?
It was getting dark.
Oh, okay. All you guys went?
He went with us. But yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. When you're at a con and a fan walks up with a comic book for you to sign, mm-hmm. can you almost predict, like, is there one particular one that's, like, in the top range of one that you're used to having to sign a lot?
Last few years, it's probably been, if it's not the latest stuff I've worked on, it's almost always some stuff from my Batman run when I did Under the Red Hood.
With that's the writer, what I got pulled up right here.
Yeah, yeah, Judd Winnick and Doug Mankey, you know, and myself. So we were on that run. We did that Under the Red Hood thing. And it blew up. And I didn't predict it was going to blow up like that. To me, back then when I was doing it, it was just a job.
Right.
And, you know, look what happened now. They made an animated feature out of it. And, you know, all of a sudden, that's all I'm signing. So, and people are like, you know, thanking me for working on it and stuff. And I'm getting,
I wish I had a Batman 638 with me right now. I totally get you to sign it.
You know, someone actually this weekend had to buy one here. They had available here to buy, so
okay.
I could buy it, and so that's what I did.
I probably would have if I'd have known that.
Yeah.
Do people, and I imagine as an artist, this would probably be, if I had to guess, the most, not annoying, but the troublesome, like, do people try to mail you comic books and get you to sign them and send them back to them?
I imagine it's happened before, but it doesn't really happen too often.
Oh, okay.
If anything, they'll send me blank cover comic books for me to draw on them and commission me and then send back, but not just an autograph. I don't know if that's worth the hassle. Just to sign a comic. I mean, they'd probably just rather try to catch me at an appearance.
Yeah, gotcha. You've done a lot of cons this year?
Yeah, I've done a few. I probably average about once a month. So last year was, I think, my record. I think I did 21 last year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So we were a big fan of Batman, Superman, stuff like that growing up. Before you got into the drawing.
Because
I can just imagine, as a fan, how awesome that would be that you're now tied to this universe of the two biggest superheroes arguably of all time, Batman and Superman, and you've worked with both.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trip when I think about it. You know, when you realize that you're finally part of their history and you worked on some of their comic books.
And that's forever. Yeah.
You know, yeah, well, hopefully we'll
100
see.
Years from now,
we'll see after I'm dead how far the legacy, if that carries at all. But just being a part of it, yeah, it's very cool when I step back and I, you know, kind of reminisce about my career.
I gotta be honest with you. When I first found out they were bringing Jason Todd back, I was like, what? I was like, come on, does nobody stay dead in the comics?
No,
like,
no,
is Uncle Ben gonna come back too? I shouldn't say that too loud, somebody might do it.
Yeah, they might.
But when I, you know, that was my initial response. And even when it was explained to me how they were doing it, I was like, huh? But then when I read it, I was like, that's actually pretty good. And it's a good thing I was wrong, because now we have the Red Hood, which is, you know, one of the big member of the Batman family. So I just imagine that's just so trippy, like you said, to think about. You're now a part of this universe that's so big.
The trippy thing is, even though I didn't have anything to do with the actual animated movie that they made from it,
mm-hmm.
I think in a special feature is when they had, like, say, Judd Winnick talking, speaking to the camera, they would flash some of the panels that Doug and I worked on on screen. So that was pretty cool. And they actually did that with, I was surprised to find out, in the special or ultimate edition version of Batman versus Superman that just came out, the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
In the special features, they actually flashed some of the stuff that we worked on. So that was a surprise to me. I had no idea until I saw it.
That's really
cool. Of course,
cool.
I screen capped all of it and I put it up on my website.
Well, it's not just comic books that you do. I mean, you have you dabble in everything art-wise. What's some of the other stuff that you got going on?
Well, lately, in the last few years, I've been doing more TV stuff.
Okay.
So I don't know if you guys pay attention or watch Big Brother on CBS. It's the reality show. You know, a lot of people living in the house and they evict. Yeah. So actually, last week they just showed the episode where one of the competitions was a comic book covers drawn of the house members, and I did some of those.
Okay.
And I've been doing that since 2014. So I think I have another piece of art coming up here in an upcoming episode as we wrap up the season. I'll have to find out exactly. But that, and then I don't know what else. I just kind of, I don't know, on the side, just commissions, and I do freelance photography too. So whenever my schedule allows, I get hired to do some photo shoots. You know, I shoot models as well and everything, and fitness competitors, bodybuilders. Yeah, so I keep myself busy.
Right on. We interviewed Chuck Dixon a while back.
Yeah, I met Chuck.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. He was really cool to us. And I asked him, you know, do you have a favorite character to write for? And he said that he said, I don't know if Punisher is my favorite character to write for, but it comes easy to me. Is it kind of, is there something similar to that in the art world where there's a particular character that it just kind of comes natural to you?
Yeah.
You?
Well, I mean, Spider-Man has always been my favorite character. I've been drawing Spider-Man since as long as I can remember.
Right.
So, I mean, I could draw him, you know, in my sleep.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, some characters with the simpler costumes like Superman, you know, Batman, fairly simple costume, but they're also, they're such household names that anyone who likes to draw superheroes tends to draw those guys yeah. first anyway. But, yeah, I mean, the ones that give me problems are the ones that have costume changes or have a lot of elements to their costumes or a lot of armor and stuff yeah. like that. It's just a pain in the ass to draw.
Yeah, and I imagine there's a lot of homework like involved Iron as far as Man. Continuity yeah. with that. Like,
oh,
if,
yeah, sure.
If something
yeah.
happened to the comic and you're not caught up, you're like, well, you yeah. can't draw him like that because he yeah. changed this.
Yeah, usually the editor would bring that to my attention
yeah.
and say, hey, look, you know, we have to...
Don't forget there's a bullet hole there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's yeah, what they're there for.
So. But there's a lot of that.
Yep, yep.
What is your go-to, like, medium that you, I guess medium would be the correct word in the art world. Like, do you prefer penciling, painting, or what kind of paints do you like to use?
Well, I used to say painting because it was just a nice, relaxing way for me to get away from just the, you know, the drawing and the inking and stuff like that. I guess I would still say painting, but now I'm doing more digital stuff, like drawing directly into the computer with a stylus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're still drawing it, except I don't have to deal with, you know, messy paints, you know,
right.
cleaning up and all that stuff. So it makes things a little bit easier that way. Plus, it's easier to correct my mistake. If I make a mistake, I can just, like, hit the back button or something.
It never happened.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, it's not like I can't correct original stuff or traditional. It's just a little harder to do, a little
right.
more painstaking.
Before we go, I know everybody's trying to break down and get out of here. What do you need to plug anything, like your current stuff that you're working on, websites, social media?
Well, if you just Google my name, you'll find all that social media.
Right.
And like the first like 20 things that pop up on Google. So as far as plugging stuff, I'm working with writer Keith Champagne. He's another DC Comics veteran. And we did a Kickstarter earlier this year, and it was successful. It raised over... almost $33,000 to do our own character. It's called The Switch. The graphic novel is called The Switch. And
that's the name of the character, The Switch?
It's kind of. Well, the concept is that this character, this bad guy, well, this bad girl, like a sexy bad girl chick.
Yeah.
She's part of, like, the worst gang in the world. Horrible crimes, you know, everything. You know how, so what we're exploring is, you know how over time you kind of grow apart from certain friends, you know, as you grow up?
Right.
It's like the same thing. She's kind of growing apart from this gang. She doesn't want to do bad stuff anymore. She wants to do good. But the problem is she's already committed all these crimes. So the only way she can start to do good is if she does it under another secret identity.
Hmm.
So she adopts a secret identity to start doing good because even if she comes clean, she's got to face the consequences for what she's already done. On top of that, usually if you want to quit a gang, they're going to try to kill you. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You got problems on both sides.
Yep,
there.
Exactly. So that's what the story is basically about. Plus a lot of hijinks and just, you know, some goofy adventure and humor and action. And
is that something
like that.
That's out now? Or?
No, we're working on it. It should be out in spring.
Okay.
You know, it's going to be... originally, we were going to publish it just through the Kickstarter, but we got picked up by Dynamite Entertainment right away.
Nice.
So we're excited to be with them and to have them publish our work.
Well, that's really cool. Thanks again for taking a few minutes to talk to us and hang
yeah,
out.
Yeah, thanks for having
very,
me.
Very, very nice to meet you.
Yes.
I wish I had my Batman. Was that 638? Where that was the one where he actually realized who Red Hood was.
I don't know the numbers. They're all such a blur to me now. I just know we did a bunch of like issues in a row.
Gotcha. Yeah, it was part of... It was a four-part series, I think, or...
It was a big arc, yeah. You know, under the Red Hood, so... Yeah. I don't know. You have, it's around there.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again, and you have a good afternoon.
Thank
have
you.
Safe travels.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Stay away from the Denver airport.
All right, that concludes all of our adventures at the Delta Fan Fest. At least the ones we're allowed to talk about on the air, anyway. Want to say we had a great time. Met a lot of cool people. Made a lot of contacts, a lot of people from other cons that invited us to come out. All our guests on the show that we interviewed, we had a great time talking to them. Again, met a lot of cool people, made a lot of new friends, and look forward to do it again next year. Don't forget to tune in next week. Next week kicks off Halloween month. with Kill Pop Culture. That's right. Don't forget, with Kill Pop Culture, we don't just have Halloween as one day. It's an entire month. And we're kicking it off right. Our next show will be Wednesday, October the 5th, and we're going to have special guest Miss Shannon Byers from Timeless Paranormal. We look forward to hearing from her. It's going to be a good show. Make sure you tune in and check it out. We're also going to tell you about how to win a copy of Dr. Alan Brown's new book entitled Ghosts of Mississippi's Golden Triangle. We have a signed copy that we're going to give away, and we're going to tell you how you could be potentially a winner of one of those books. Love you, bye.